As you write your life story, you're far from finished. Are you looking to close the book on your job? Maybe turn a page in your career? Be continued at the Georgetown University School of Continuing Studies. Our professional master's degrees and certificates are designed to meet you where you are and take you where you want to go. At Georgetown SCS, the learning never stops, and neither do you. Write your next chapter. Be continued at scs.georgetown.edu/podcast.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, I'm Wendy.
And I'm Jess, and you're listening to the Food Heaven Podcast,
your online resource for inclusive and accessible wellness. Happy holidays, everyone. Jess and I are actually on holiday break right now. And so we decided to re-air one of our favorite conversations with our colleague, dietitian Marcy Evans, on social comparison theory. Especially during this time of the year, there are so many like 2022 recaps about all the great things that happened. And so I think it could be really easy to fall into that trap of comparing your success, your body, your relationship status, even your living situation to someone else's. And so I thought that this was a really timely conversation to wrap up 2022. We are actually going to be doing a new series come January on habits, how to create habits that actually last. So stay tuned for that. For now, I'm going to leave you with this episode, and we'll catch you next week for the first episode of our habit series. Happy New Year's!
Welcome to the podcast, Marcy.
Oh my gosh, ladies, I am so honored to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me to come chat with you.
Thank you so much for coming on to talk to us today. So social comparison theory, I want to start there because I learned a lot going to your presentation at FENCY, and I'm sure most, if not all of our listeners have no idea what that is.
Right.
So can you start there? Like, what is social comparison theory?
I am happy to start there. And if your listeners are thinking like, what are they talking about? Know that I actually was in the same boat. I was actually invited to give this talk that you guys are referencing. And they said, hey, specifically, can you talk about social comparison theory? And at first I thought, what are they talking about? And what does this have to do sort of with my area of specialty and expertise? And as I started digging into the research, I was like, oh, I totally know what this is. It just sort of had this like fancy name on it. So when I explain it, everybody is going to be like, oh yeah, this makes total sense. It's a theory that makes a lot of intuitive sense. So it started as this kind of idea that the psychologist had. This is way back in the 1950s, and said, you know, human beings sort of have this tendency to compare to one another. And so his hypothesis was that comparison was this really important and primary way that human beings get a sense of who they are and how they fit in the world. This idea of figuring out, like, who am I and how do I get a sense of sort of how I make sense in this larger universe? And so when he started to kind of do some research on this theory, what came of it was this idea is that human beings absolutely do a lot of social comparison. And we tend to do social comparison in arenas where there isn't necessarily an objective correct answer. And so what this means is we all try to make sense of who we are in this world. Am I good enough? Am I doing the right thing? And the way that we kind of figure that out is by looking at the people around us, right? And so the idea is that we compare up as well as compared down. And what that means is that when we're comparing up, we're looking at people that we perceive are maybe doing a better job at something. And I can give some examples. But we also compare down as a way to get a sense of, hey, I actually think I'm doing pretty good. Look at this person over here. Mm-hmm. You weren't very good at that. Like, I think I'm doing all right. And so we're doing these cross comparisons all the time as a way to get a sense of like, am I doing okay? And so it's a very, very human thing. It's really rooted in our neurobiology. We've evolved to be these very social creatures that depend on one another to live in this interconnected way. But it also is a bit stressful because we're always trying to guess and figure out, you know, like, am I hanging? Like, right, is my crew, how am I doing with my crew?
Exactly. So I feel like it's interesting that you mentioned that you also didn't really know what this was kind of before you started your research. But then once you got really in the thick of it, you were like, wait a minute, this is exactly, this like totally ties into the work that I do with body image and eating disorders and all that. So can you tell, like, once you started getting immersed in this world, how did you see that like clear connection there?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I really appreciated about the research that I was able to do was just how human nature this is, right? Like, I absolutely see it in the work that I do with my clients. So my particular sort of niche, as you mentioned, is working with people who maybe have a history of chronic dieting, disordered eating, perhaps even a full-fledged eating disorder, and body image, which is an area that I am really, really passionate about. And what I discovered is my clients are vulnerable to this, but as human beings in general, we're all kind of vulnerable to this. But where the research I think is really, really interesting is, and you guys can let me know how much you want me to like geek out over the neuroscience, is that there's some really interesting stuff in terms of what happens to our brains. And that there are some people who are more vulnerable to making these cross comparisons than others. And I think that my clients that I work with in particular tend to be people who are a little bit more vulnerable to being oriented around what does the world outside of me think of me, and how do they perceive me to be? And so I think that's the space that really struck me, and I began to make sense of why I was invited to give the talk, is that it really ties in nicely to individuals who are really, really vulnerable, perhaps to negative body image, to sort of feeling pressure from the external world, feeling like they're vulnerable, perhaps to following what other people are suggesting that they do. And so that's where I see it play out with my clients in particular. But like I said, I don't want to paint that with too critical of a paintbrush, because I think as human beings, most of us are pretty vulnerable to that. I think it's more the rare person who isn't particularly affected by the world outside of them.
Right. That's what I was just thinking, because I'm like, well, everyone to a certain degree is
totally,
you know, vulnerable to comparison. Have you seen, like, with the research that you've come across or any literature, that there are groups that might be a little more vulnerable than like everyone else?
Yeah. This was actually a piece of the research that I thought was really interesting, is that the researchers started to look at this concept called, and it's a fan, we don't need to get too sort of tied up in the language of it, but this idea of social comparison orientation. And the idea is that there are certain personality and temperament traits that are more highly correlated with doing a lot of comparing. And a lot of that social comparing. So folks who tend to, and again, these are associations, they're not causative, right? And it's not an assumption that if you identify with one of these traits, you're sort of doomed, not at all. But some of the most common traits that are associated with high levels of kind of comparing yourself to other people are people who tend to feel highly self-conscious, individuals who may rank lower in assessments for self-esteem. This is a kind of a technical term, but talking about people who rate higher with what's called neuroticism, which I don't love that word because I think it's a really, it sounds like very critical, but it's people who tend to be more worriers. Which I have my hand up because I feel like I was born worried. So I am someone who tends to really, really worry quite easily. It's also associated with people who maybe lean in the direction of depression. And these last three, I think, are really interesting. So the last three I want to mention are individuals who are highly interested in what other people feel and need.
Oh my God. Empathic people?
Yes, exactly. That's the next one, is people who are highly empathic. Oh, and I have like goosebumps while I'm saying this. And people who are not necessarily competitive, but have a mindset of interdependency. This idea of like, we need one another. We rely on one another. And so I think I always want to be very careful, because I don't want to be framing this in a negative way, right? Someone who has low self-esteem, or you're a worrier. Well, the reality is this really impacts people who are big time, highly sensitive, really tuned into how other people feel, highly empathic. And so these are incredible strengths and wonderful traits to have, but those are the same traits that are going to leave you more vulnerable to being impacted by those external forces. Whereas somebody who maybe is more sort of less concerned with relationships, or maybe sort of more trying to draw into themselves or not particularly empathetic. Those are people who have a little bit more buffering between them and the outside world, because they maybe care a little bit less about what other people think. So it's not that one way is right and the other way is wrong. It's just different.
Oh my God. Yeah. I feel like we're over here nodding our heads.
That's us.
Totally. Yeah.
We're like, we're very empathic.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're so tuned in that it's like, okay.
Yeah, it's like, how can I tune out?
How do I turn that volume down so that I'm not so acutely tuned in?
Now, okay, so you talked about what it is, who's more vulnerable. What are the downsides of, like, comparing yourself to other people, number one? And then number two, like, because you mentioned comparing up and comparing down.
Yeah.
Are there any upsides at all, or is this all just, like, a negative, and what are those?
Right. No, this is an important question for us to dive into. So if it's okay for you, let me just sort of back up and talk a little bit about what happens in our brains so we can make sense of what we're experiencing. Is that all right?
Of course. We love all the science.
So I know in a fantasy world, I study neurobiology, but I sort of just, play it on a podcast instead. So what happens in our brains is that it's not just about when we're comparing ourselves to another person, but if we compare ourselves to another person and we come to the conclusion that, like, oh, I'm doing better than that person. And however you define better, right? It doesn't have to be something that's, like, clearly measured by a number. You can just sort of look and say, yeah, like, I think I'm have a better website than this person. It lights up the reward center in your brain. It's literally neurobiologically rewarding. So it's not just about this idea of how am I doing in comparison? It's that if I feel that I'm doing better than you, even if we're not actually in a competition, I'm going to feel those reward boosting chemicals in my brain light up. Now, the upside of that, right? If we don't want to look at it, just from sort of this cynical standpoint, is that we can potentially use that to empower ourselves for continued self-improvement and a way to, like, keep pushing ourselves or sort of work to the next level. So I'll be vulnerable and give a little example. So both Jess and Wendy, you guys know I have followed your work for a long time. I look at what you put out into the world and I am like, oh my gosh, how do these ladies do it? How is it that, like, everything they put out, their brand, they are so polished. Like, I love how they deliver their material. And I immediately was like, oh my God, I hate my website.
Oh my God, Marcy.
First of all, we didn't even
have that color scheme. How did they do that? It's so natural, right? But if I can shift that and be like, okay, not bag on myself, but as a way to be like, ooh, how am I going to use this, right? How am I going to use this as motivation to be like, how can I sort of take my work to the next level? Then we're really sort of using it in a positive direction. So it's not all doom and gloom.
Oh my God. First of all, we didn't even know you knew who we were. So, wow. Yeah. It's funny because you never know also how, what you're putting out, like, not even website, but just, like, content in general. Like, I don't know. I try to be mindful of, like, oh God, is this helpful in any way? Is this going to make someone feel worse about themselves? Am I, like, painting a false picture of what's really going on? So it's hard on both sides, like you're saying. But
totally.
That's
really interesting. I love that this is such a, like, a real life example, right? We're sort of using ourselves because it demonstrates how this whole little experience that we all have happens in this silo. It happens inside of ourselves, right? Like, you guys are like, what are you talking about? But I've had, my own little experience of, like, seeing your work, being really impressed. And it's like, well, wait a minute, how do I use this as a motivator and not just do that comparison to be like, oh man, my work sucks.
Yeah.
Sort of speaks to sort of this other piece is that when we are comparing what's called comparing down. So this idea of maybe I look at somebody else's website and be like, oh, I don't like their website. Like, I actually think my website's pretty awesome. The downside of that is that it creates this dynamic in that comparison of not only sort of feeling better about myself, but it means that I lose disconnection with my feelings of compassion and empathy, right? This idea of if I imagine myself to sort of be superior then I sort of feel relief of like, oh, okay, I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay in the world. But then we're in this rat race as a way to always feel sort of okay in the world, that it's dependent upon these cross comparisons. And that is like being like tossed in a boat on like rocky seas, right? Because then we're sort of left to who we happen to be comparing ourselves to that day. So, you know, the way that I approach this dilemma is saying, one, it's totally human. You're not bad if you do it. We don't need to lay on additional shame and blame. And you're like, oh, I'm terrible. I'm comparing again. It's to be like, yeah, how do I be compassionate with myself? Like I'm falling into a comparison trap. This is what most of us do as human beings, but how do I use that self-awareness and channel in a way that for me is going to be in alignment with my values and is going to allow me to sort of put my feet forward in a direction that is positive and that is empowering, and use it as a way to sort of move your influence in a positive direction rather than being stuck kind of in that negative spiral.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That a lot of things were coming to mind as you were talking about this, because when comparing, like, I think there might be an assumption like, oh, maybe comparing down feels better than comparing up. But when you compare down, it's like, ultimately you feel shitty too, because you're like, well, in a way you're using this person's, you know, situation that might not be ideal for you as a way for you to feel better about yourself. Yeah. And it's like, well, that doesn't feel great.
That just feels good.
Yeah. Mm. So it's, I mean, based on everything that you're telling me, it's like it happens and it's natural. But do you think it's useful to incorporate some kind of objectivity to all of this, where it's like, this is what's happening, but you're also not completely consumed by comparison? You acknowledge that it's a natural thing, but it doesn't completely overtake you, and you're able to just take a step back. And I like what you said, like, how can I use this to fuel my goals, my vision for whatever it is that I want? Like, if I want a website that speaks to my target population or has these like color palettes, how can I use all this, you know, like all these feelings that I'm getting from social comparison, how can I use that to fuel the goals that I have for my website?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Totally. I completely agree. And one thing I will say is that I have actually, after I sort of dove into all this research and developed this talk, and like, it was such a learning experience for me, I began pulling it into my work with my clients. And what I noticed is that my clients, as they learned that this was like a thing, right, that it was a theory and that it's a phenomenon, it allowed them to have a little bit more space between being sort of stuck and mired in the comparison and being able to kind of step outside of it. And I do think that's a really important first step, because sort of more specifically related to the work that we do as dietitians, there is really important research that shows that women in particular are vulnerable to comparing when it comes to food. So have you ever been out at a restaurant where maybe you're sitting there, you're deciding what to order, and everyone is ordering a salad, and you're like, I really don't want a salad. I want a burger. Mm-hmm. But like, can I be the one person that gets the burger while everybody else is eating the salad, right? And how many of our choices around food are impacted by the messaging around us, by other people's choices around us, and how problematic it is to be making choices based on those external influences rather than sort of internally what you feel like is maybe in your own best interest.
Oh, exactly. I just had this conversation with a client this morning, and I feel like it comes up at least twice a week where people are like traveling or out to eat. And it's like, we were talking about the hunger scale, and she was traveling and just saying how she was full way before it seemed like other people were. But then she's like, just comparing kind of, you know, where people are like, wait, others are full way before me. What is that? What's going on? Mm-hmm. And so we were just talking about how liberating it can be to just kind of like worry about focus on yourself and feel confident and like, no, I'm hungry. I don't care if you're hungry or not, or I'm not hungry right now. You can be whatever you are and not have it be, you know, this negative thing. So I think that's so important, you know, to bring that conversation back to food.
Yeah. And absolutely. Also like, when it's happening, like in that situation, sometimes you don't even realize that you're comparing, because with food, it's like, it's almost like peer pressure. Like everyone's eating and it's just kind of normal to continue eating because everyone else is doing it.
Exactly.
Totally. I was at a brunch like a few weeks ago, and I remember someone said, they're like, oh, so so-and-so got another scone. I guess that means I can too. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting, right? Like there is that part of our brain that we're wired for and the way that it's playing out with food and how this idea of, you know, is my behavior okay or not okay based on what someone else is doing, right? So she felt permission in that moment to eat more because someone else was eating more, which is actually totally detached from her own inner sense of enoughness. Am I still hungry? Yeah. What am I in the mood for? Am I full? What would it be like if I want more scone to sort of get the scone and save it for later when I'm hungry again? And how we can see the ways in which it can be problematic when our decision-making is based on what is right for someone else rather than what is right for our own selves and our own bodies.
I love it. You brought up body image. I want to dive into that. But before, I just want to go back to the social media piece, which I think can relate to body image as well, and just how that all ties in. So like for myself, I'm a little bit on the older, more seasoned side. So I grew up when like there was no social media, there was no cell phones. Like I didn't get a cell phone. They weren't really popular until I was a senior in high school. And then it was like the flip phone was like the cool. Well, first it was like the Nokia, then the flip phone was the coolest thing. And of course, at that time, I remember definitely comparing myself for sure, but to no extent like the same as I do now with now that social media is like basically the new reality. So have you come across in research that with this idea of social comparison theory, is it much worse now because of social media? Is it like amplified times a million compared to like back in the day when you didn't have these tools to visually see where everybody was at every moment and what they look like, what they're eating, what they're doing?
Yeah, that is, oh my gosh. I do not know if that exact research has been done, like sort of like comparing points in time, sort of pre everything blowing up on social media and versus now. I mean, I'm with you. I didn't actually get my first cell phone until I was in college. And so I am sort of that generation that has really observed this, like I've lived both sort of versions of reality. And so I don't know that that research has been done, but I think that it is really, really reasonable to assume that it is far more challenging now because the opportunities for comparison are out of control. It is literally constant. Like there just were not that many opportunities when we didn't have social media and we didn't have the internet and didn't use the internet like we do now. Because I mean, all of us, I mean, I work on this myself, like really trying to be mindful of not just if I have a spare second, not just automatically going to Instagram to start scrolling, right? But it takes a lot of self-awareness and self-discipline because like it's just so easy to do. So my sense is I can't speak to the literature on this, but I will say that I think it's a very reasonable assumption to say we are way more vulnerable now because the opportunities to compare and not just sort of like compare your neighbor or compare with your best friend. You can compare with literally thousands of people, like at any one moment. It's nuts.
Yeah, especially with food, because there's just so much content about food, whether it's like really delicious food porn recipes or whether it's like, don't eat this, eat that or whatever. And it's like, oh my God, it's a nightmare scrolling through Instagram sometimes because there's just so much stimulation and comparison happening. So I'm just like, okay, do we need to just get offline? Like, I'm wondering, because you're also online, you have a social platform, but have there been like any things that have been useful for navigating that online for you?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question. And I'm almost thinking about your question, like in two different directions. Like one, how do I navigate this as a food professional who puts sort of material out into the world so we can sort of maybe talk about it from that vantage point. And then also, how do I deal with this as a human being, right? As somebody who is, you know, essentially neurobiologically wired the same as any other person, basically, that I'm, you know, that I'm also vulnerable. And I will say, this is going to sound super basic, but I really, really, really believe it is so vitally important to curate your feed. And if you are going through your feed and something makes you feel like shit, it doesn't mean if you think, but it should be making me feel good, or this person should, you know, is a positive person. It shouldn't be making me feel bad. It does not matter. If you are scrolling and something makes you feel like shit, it makes you feel like shit. So you either need to take a moment and unfollow, even if it's for a period of time. cultivate your feed differently, consider following different people, and also taking pauses and taking breaks. Like I am someone where the vulnerability for me isn't really particularly around food, but I love fashion. I love shopping. I love clothes and I love interior design. Mm. And I will tell you, if I spend too much time on my own personal Instagram feed, I start to feel like shit. It's like all the clothes in my closet suck. You know, like, ooh, why, you know, why did I choose this paint color on this wall? Like it's not necessarily just in body image or just in food. It could be any facet of your life. And you're noticing like, wow, I'm taking in this sort of barrage of images and this barrage of messages. And it takes, I think, it's really important self-awareness and mindfulness to be noticing what is the impact on me? Because at the end of the day, like, you are the only person that can filter out what you're bringing in. Like there's a lot that we cannot filter out, that we don't have a choice around. It sort of enters our lives without our choosing, but there is a lot that we do choose. And like, we have to be very, very wise gatekeepers of what we let in and what we don't let in, because I think it can affect us sometimes more than we even realize, because we kind of can sort of scroll in this passive way. So I know that those aren't necessarily like brand new ideas, but I think that they're, in my experience, ideas that I've had to be really committed to.
Yeah. I love that you brought up the idea that it's not just food. It's not just body image. It's like almost everything, because you just made me think about, I definitely compare with interior design and with clothes as well and with beauty stuff. So I was looking at this woman. I actually really like her feed too, but I'm just like, I don't know if I should be following this. She does, she's like a minimalist and like tiny house living. And she has this like gorgeous tiny house that's in Venice Beach. It's like the Venice Canal. I don't know if you guys have seen her. I forget what her name is, but it was like last week I was following her stuff and it's like all these perfect pictures of her and her kid and her husband and their dogs and their tiny house. And I was like frantically searching, like, we need a tiny house in Venice. We need to move.
Totally. Totally.
I was like looking on Redfin. How can I get a tiny house like this in Venice? Like, we need a canal house, babe. We gotta go. He's like, okay. He's like, where is this coming from? So I think it's so true, like across the board, and just really thinking about, yeah, is this making me feel better or is this making me feel worse? No judgment. Even if there's accounts, you know, that you have to mute because maybe it's like, you know, friends or whatever that may not, or even like, you know, some colleagues where it's like, oh gosh, I'm not sure if this is really helping me, but I still want to support your account and follow and whatever, like, you know, muting some of those too, I think can be really helpful.
Yeah. Or maybe like sometimes you don't even feel like shit per se about the content, but you feel like shit about spending so much time scrolling online.
Exactly.
You're like, wait, did I just really spend like 30 minutes of my day looking through like God knows how many Instagram pictures, like, damn, I don't feel good, you know?
Right.
So there's that too.
Exactly.
Oh, 100%. I completely agree. I had a client yesterday, we were just talking and she was like, she's like, Marcy, this is out of control for me. And she's like, it is literally making my depression worse. She's like, I am committing. I feel like a step I can take is to not be on my phone, literally turn my phone off between 7 and 9 PM. And then she like followed up and said like, all right, I did it. And this is how I use the time instead. Like I drank a cup of tea. I worked on my cross stitch and I read my book and I felt so much better.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. We're trying to have, there's this guy who wrote a book called Digital Minimalism, where he talks about like this exact process for, well, first of all, why social media is bad. And his isn't focused as much on social comparison, but kind of, and it does go into the research on, I don't want to say bad because it's helpful in some ways, but just how it can be harmful and the addictive like behaviors that come from it. And so he talks about how to go on, you know, the social media kind of detox. And we really want to have him on the podcast, but the downside is he's not on social media. He doesn't check his emails. So it's like, no, you can't get a hold of him.
Yeah. He took like a month to reply.
Oh, did he did respond.
He did, but I think it was his assistant, and his assistant was like, yeah, he's off the map right now.
So. He doesn't engage. He's just like,
His assistant's like, my life sucks. I do all of his, emails plus my emails because he's off email.
Yeah, she's like, I'll get to him next year. But I mean, he's like, it hasn't impacted my business. Like it's going well. And anyway, whatever works. So I want to talk about body image because I feel like that's just like so much and it affects almost everybody these days. So obviously, like we know that social comparison theory can have you comparing your body to other people's bodies. And you you're a body image expert. So like, what are some of the things that you recommend people do in order to have that or negate some of the stuff that comes up for them with comparing and like have that positive body image given the landscape of everything going on?
Yeah, it's a really important and I think very challenging question. And I think what you said is exactly on point, is that body image impacts most people. Often people think of it as like, oh, you know, Marcy, you're, you know, an eating disorders person. You sort of talk about eating disorders and body image and eating disorders. And I say, when I'm talking about body image, I'm talking about how it impacts the vast majority of people. It's not just sort of like an eating disorders issue. And one potential way to begin is to think about trying on and experimenting with using social media to your benefit. And I think it's incredibly important to have a diversified social media feed where you are seeing different people in different kinds of bodies living their best lives, right? Because historically, the imagery that we have seen of people in larger bodies has been degrading, has been demoralizing, sort of positioning them in ways where they are, you know, unhealthy and miserable. And that's often the caricature that is created in shows and TV and media. And so beginning to curate a way of seeing the world in which people in all kinds of bodies can live productive, useful, fulfilling, interesting lives. And there is really right now, I think, no better place to do that than Instagram. And so if you want, that would be one way in. You could try it on and see if it feels helpful for you, see if it doesn't feel helpful for you. That's not necessarily going to be a strategy that's going to be effective for everyone. But I do think that sort of shifting what we're taking in visually is a really, can be a really important and helpful step. Because we have been offered a way of conceptualizing beauty that has been incredibly narrow. And I think that that has been damaging for a number of decades, certainly, you know, kind of in our generation. We grew up sort of seeing one kind of beauty. And one of the things that's been, I think, really interesting for me in my research and looking at how does a person cultivate positive body image, and it's associated, more positive body image is associated with a number of traits. One of those traits is that we see this in people who have a more flexible and broad definition of what beauty is. And also we see this in protective in people who identify perhaps with their own unique background and culture. So for instance, this was looked at in Native people in Canada. They did this really interesting study and found that the people who were really connected to their cultural roots actually had a far more positive body image and a much broader way of identifying with what is beautiful, that it wasn't sort of this narrowed kind of whitewashed, for lack of a better word, way of seeing beauty in the world.
So Marcy, can you share like some of your go-to resources? I mean, I know some of our guests have mentioned like meditations that help with cultivating a healthy body image. If there's any books that you really enjoy that you think might be helpful, what are some of your go-to resources for listeners who are like, okay, I wanna give this a shot. I wanna channel social comparison in a way that maybe is more useful for me.
Yeah, there is actually, if I was to give one recommendation, and this is what I tell to clinicians that I work with in training or supervision, and this is what I tell to my clients, is the concept of self-compassion. And it is, I think, the number one most important skill to develop as it relates to body image. And it's very interesting because if you read about self-compassion or read a book about self-compassion, it's not as if they're talking about body image, you know, specifically, but it's a broad skill set that can be used to apply to, you know, lots of different areas of your life. But there's research on self-compassion and that it demonstrates that it is actually a really important buffer for how we interact with the world around us. And it gives us the skill to have a little sort of almost like, I think of it as like a little padding between you and the world, you know, that we're getting all of these messages. And it's a skill set to develop that helps you to be able to navigate all of that. And there's, I think, really important research that shows that individuals who have a higher capacity to practice self-compassion, which is different than, very different than self-esteem, actually tend to fare better when it comes to mental health and when it comes to body image specifically. So that's my number one thing that I point to. So even just going, I would encourage you to, and I can give you guys the link to, there's a website called selfcompassion.org. And I thought this was really interesting. And I actually utilize this with my clients. There's a quiz and you can sort of look at like, okay, well, how am I doing with sort of the concept of self-compassion? And it gives you a sense of where are the areas that I can specifically begin to develop a little bit. And one of the things that I love about this sort of concept of self-compassion is that you can think of it like a skill. And we can learn skills, whether we're learning the skill of like how to prepare a meal quickly or like how to ride a bike, like how to do liquid eyeliner, right? Like these are like skills that we can use and learn. It's not something that like you have or don't have, it's a practice. And so I really love the self-compassion website, the sort of selfcompassion.org, because it really breaks down in a very clear way what self-compassion is and practices that can help you develop it. And even just doing like for any listeners who may be open to it, like, so I love, have you guys ever heard of Insight Timer?
Yes. Love it.
Do you love it?
Yeah. That's the, it's a meditation app,
yeah,
right? That has a ton
of,
yeah,
app.
I love it.
I would love to say that I use it all the time. I don't. But I would say it's my favorite resource because it's free and they have a bazillion options. And I love it. I think it's incredibly user-friendly. And like you can go and go through the search feed and say self-compassion and just start practicing with a self-compassion meditation or finding a mantra that really works for you and sort of how can I speak to myself? I mean, the whole idea of thinking about what is self-compassion? It's a way of developing a relationship with yourself and a conversation with yourself where you're speaking to yourself in a way that you would someone that you deeply care about. So like, what is sort of the stance that you take with a child or with your best friend, right? That you might not agree with their behavior or they might have made a mistake or sort of, you know, really screwed something up, but how do you respond to that? And if it's someone that you really, really love and care about, you probably respond with compassionate kindness. And so developing a way of relating to your own self and your own struggles in that compassionate way, I think is like the most important thing, like the most important skill I would hope for anybody to learn. And it's directly applicable to body image.
Oh my gosh, Marcy, you're so amazing. I just love all these tools that you're, I'm writing everything down. We're going to include it in the show notes. I think this has been, it's going to be so helpful for folks, especially because, again, when we talk about self-compassion, it's very theoretical, but I like that these are like practical things we can all do. We'll all go to that website. We'll all take that quiz. Like you guys download Insight Timer right now. You don't have to pay for it, like she said. And I think it'll get us closer to having that balance and not comparing ourselves as much, which can, you know, have those negative consequences. So for folks who are like, they want to learn more about you, they want to check out your amazing website, Instagram, maybe even work with you, where can they find out more about your work?
Oh, sure. So my website is marcyrd.com. So it's marcyrd.com. And then all of my social media handles are marcyrd. So I'm fairly easy to find. And you'll see that there was an intentional choice that I made, certainly in my Instagram, where I decided to have very little in terms of imagery of myself. And not to say this is the only way to do it. This is not the only way to do it. It was a personal choice that even though I'm a dietitian, I don't have much there by way of, you know, this is what I eat for breakfast or this is what I'm having for dinner. Because my sort of, I feel like one of my life's purposes and what I'm really passionate about my work is helping people to reduce that comparison. It's not like, oh, Marcy ate that for dinner. That's what I should eat for dinner. It's for you to think about, what do you want? right? Tune into your own self. So you'll see that what I try to put out in my social media feed is, I hope, embodies sort of reducing that comparison to what other people are doing, and that that isn't how you want to guide your life. Like, you want to guide it from your own inner self and your own inner core of what is in your own best interest. And only you can decide that.
Right. And I'm on your website right now. It's gorgeous.
It's fire.
I love it.
And I'm on your social media. I mean, we follow you, but I just like, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah,
I
love
the
fonts,
layout. Right.
Color palette.
Yeah, but still, ladies, we're going to have a chat at this next Fancy. I'm going to
Absolutely.
Oh, great. Yeah, so you're going to be at Fancy.
Share.
Yeah, I'm going to be at Fancy. I'm going to be talking about body image, actually. So, like, stay tuned. I'm going to be talking a lot about the neurobiology of body image. It's really, really fascinating stuff. So, we'll be able to hopefully see each other.
You're like the new dietitian neuroscience expert now.
Wannabe, total wannabe.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. We'll see you at Fancy.
Bye.
Oh, thank you. I really hope some of the stuff I shared was useful.
Oh, my God.
I know what your listeners think. And, and thanks so much. I hope you guys have a great rest of your day.
You too. Bye, Marcy.
Bye, Marcy.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of the Food Heaven podcast. If you haven't already, make sure to connect with us online. We're most active on the gram at Food Heaven, but we're also on Facebook and Twitter at Food Heaven Show. If you like this podcast, make sure to rate, review, subscribe, and share with a friend.
Yep, our podcast is released every Wednesday, and each week we take a deep dive into topics like health at every size, food and culture, intuitive eating, mental health, and body acceptance. If you're looking for a sustainable and inclusive path to wellness, come hang out with us to learn how to take care of yourself from the inside out. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.